the next of our Cambie Report Council interview series, we're sitting down with Graham Cook, independent for Vancouver City Council.
Happy to be here.
And we should disclose that you are one of our patrons. As always, we maintain a policy that our patrons don't get to direct our content, but we do appreciate their support.
Yeah.
So Graham, tell listeners who don't know you who you are. What's your background?
Yeah, so I am, as you said, Graham Cook, not Adrian Crook or any other similar sounding names. I'm running as an independent for Vancouver City Council. And why I'm running is I'm a young person who, is starting a life here with my wonderful partner. And, it's really hard. And I think like a lot of young candidates and young people just involved with the election have kind of pointed out, we've seen a lot of our friends move away, a lot of our family and colleagues move away. And that really kind of spurred me to want to get involved and want to bring that voice to the table at City Hall. A little bit about my background. I went to business school at SFU, which I like to poke fun at because it's kind of a funny thing to do. I'm a project manager at a fantastic tech company here in Vancouver, just down the way. For the listener's sake, we're in Emily Barnes Park in Yale Town. So, that's basically me in a nutshell.
Well, let's get into some of the ideas you have. And
let's do it.
The big one on everyone's mind is housing. So what do you see as the crisis?
The crisis is a fantastic question. It's a vacancy rate crisis leading to affordability problem. And the reason I say that is that vacancy rates and rents are inversely related. So as a renter, what will help me the most, and I am a renter and I am somebody that can barely afford my rent, is what's really going to help me and what's going to help me stay in the city and what's going to help other people come to the city and start life here is a 3% vacancy rate. And so that's really what I've identified as the crisis.
And how do you get to 3%?
My sort of pitch, and I'm going to start with the talking point and move on to the human answer, is talking point, you have to incentivize and legalize purpose-built rental across the city. And what that means, on the legalized side, we need to end the apartment ban. So right now, apartments are banned in over 70% of our residential land. Just recently they've allowed duplexes, which is a great first start, but really won't move the needle on affordability. So really legalizing the existence of purpose-built rentals in more of our city, all of our city, would be ideal, the first step. And the other piece of it is really incentivizing purpose-built rentals. So obviously, the economic realities of rent control being what they are, we need to create other incentives for these to be built, whether it's a density bonus, whether it's, treating rental as a community amenity when it comes to things like CACs and community amenity contributions and development cost levies. Try not to use acronyms too much. That's really the path forward that I see.
And what's the human side you mentioned?
Yeah, so the human side, that's really, talking about my experience and the experience of, I'm sure like yourself and many others is, we show up to a one bedroom that's maybe, I'll use my example, $12.50 a month for rent. And it was like full of people, like full. Like it looked like a party was happening there. And that's never going to drive down rents. That's never going to stagnate rents. And so that's really the human side of the crisis is, we need landlord competition for tenant money.
So housing's not the only issue out on people's minds. What are the other things you're paying attention to and really would be a voice for if you're elected?
Absolutely. So I think one of the biggest things that we see around us, every day in our city is the opioid epidemic, the overdose crisis. That's why I feel so lucky to be sharing, a ballot with Sarah Blythe, who has done, just so much fantastic work. I think we need to continue our commitment to harm reduction. I am in complete agreement with her that we're not going to police our way out of this issue. We need to ensure a safe and reliable source of drugs for people who are drug addicted, and as well as treatment options. And of course, it does come back to housing. I do hate to always drag everything back into the housing debate, but it does come back to having a safe and reliable place to sleep each night.
Do you have thoughts on transit? That's always a big thing. How do we get people around the city?
Yeah, absolutely. So going all the way to UBC with the SkyTrain is one of the biggest ones. I think it doesn't make sense to stop at Arbutus. And one of the things that I think we went around on Twitter is that every discussion about whether we should have the SkyTrain or the UBC should happen on a packed 99. So when you hear some of these people say there's not the ridership, like, tell me when we're got somebody's elbow in your rib cage that there's, you know, not the ridership to justify the SkyTrain. And I think it needs to be supported by, you know, a bus network that goes well into the night. Same with the SkyTrain. It needs to go later, not just for people out partying, but for people that work later to make sure they can get home safe. And the other thing is just on active transportation and bike lanes. We need separated bike lanes. You know, I did get pretty frustrated at the Y Young interview that came out today where she was saying, oh, we can just have paint, or, you know, you can see right here. I'm gesturing to a bike lane, painted bike lane. You know, paint is not infrastructure. We need separated bike lanes. They save lives. They reduce traffic.
So how do we pay for that extended SkyTrain? You mentioned the federal government, the other levels, but yeah, at the, you know, municipal level, there's bike lanes. They're not free. They're not super expensive, but where's the cash come from?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great question, and something I've sort of joked about this year, but is a serious policy position, is that I've been, you know, radicalized by the concept of a land value tax. And I think it's one of the best paths forward. I mean, you know, a lot of the land value that we create in the city of Vancouver is through public infrastructure and is through public funds. And I think it's only right to capture those back for public use.
Well, let's just run into a couple more personal questions to close out, less politics.
Yeah.
First, as you know, Justin McElroy, and we asked this of everyone, put out the poll of who's Vancouver's unofficial ambassador, and Canuck the Crow won. Who's your unofficial ambassador of the city?
Yeah, so I think it's actually tonight's Vancouver Rata, but I'll spoil it because I think this is coming out after. So we were talking about Joe Forte, who was the first lifeguard of Vancouver. So he came over to Vancouver in the late 1800s from what is now Trinidad and Tobago, and kind of worked odd jobs, and I guess was living down at English Bay and just started saving people's lives. And in 1900 was made the city's official mascot, he was made their official lifeguard. And they say he saved at least 39 people's lives, if not more. And 10 years later, when they officially honored him, they gave him a very old-timey combination of things. It was a gold watch, a check, and a illuminated address, which I don't know how that worked in 1910 or what that looked like.
Candles or something.
Yeah, I assume. And then about a dozen years later, when he passed on, it was like a procession of the mayor and council and everybody. And he's got a plaque at Mount Pleasant Cemetery that just says Joe. And I thought that was pretty interesting.
Well, and finally, what's one thing that Vancouver has lost, whether it's a venue, an event, or just something else that you wish we could bring back?
Yeah. Can I ramble a bit?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. So I really think, and this is so cheesy, it's the people. I told this story at an All Canadians meeting recently. So I used to live in this house in East Vancouver. It was at Parker and Nanaimo. And it was like slanted and had black mold, and you could see your breath inside. It was awful, but it was $550 a month. And it was, you know, five or six of us, you know, getting by, finishing our degrees, and, you know, just kind of try and make a home of it. And when we moved in, I remember we had this rug we had found at Value Village, and this couch someone was giving away, and we had to like get it up the rickety steps. And, you know, we got in, and, you know, a few people came over to see how we were doing, and it was like 15 or 16 of us. And because I remember we were supposed to go out that night. We were all going to come in and go out because we were young and thought we were cool. And there was no lights, so we had to like plug in a lamp and get it lit up. And you know, it's 9 o'clock, it's 10 o'clock, it's 11 o'clock, it's 12, and we never left. Like, we all stayed in there talking. And I remember like looking around all the people, like 15, 16, well educated, really successful people, and you know, thinking, you know, I'm home, right? Like, this is home. And it's crazy because of those people that were there, like, me and my partner are the last ones left in Vancouver. And that's what's so, you know, important to me about bringing it to a human side when we talk about things like the housing crisis. It's important to talk about zoning, but let's talk about what we've lost, and let's talk about what we can bring back. Maybe it's too late for, you know, you and I. Maybe we can't correct, you know, housing in time, but we can do it for the next people and the people that are going to come here and start a life.
Well, it's a great place to end it. Thank you so much,
Fantastic.
Greg.
Fantastic. Thank you.